scanning the infield there as Paddock came set. And he bunts and he gets it down and he's going to end up with a base hit and an RBI. How about that for beating the shift?
I'll start with Lynch, even better version than what we saw in his first start, and he was really good in the first. Thought he had everything working, both sides elevated, down when he needed it, change was good, breaking ball was swing and miss again. Controlled the counts, everything we asked him to do, and then we had some really pretty defense behind him. The double play that Mondi and Nicky pulled off there early was one of the better you're going to see, and then pull off two other ones besides that, obviously, and in the game. Good defense, good positioning, Benny being in the right place late in the game on the line drive, it could be a game changer, and Witt coming in hard. Just that great mix of pitching, defense, and then the bullpen to me was everything that we could ask for. They were lights out.
Well, the guy I've been talking about that I think can be the number one starter on the Royals rotation eventually, and that is the best of the young pitchers, is Daniel Lynch. And he proved that yesterday, and he did not pitch that poorly the first start of the year. He made two big mistakes. He said it after the game against the Cardinals. And last night, Daniel Lynch was very good. Went 5+, 4 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 2 Ks. And we talked about yesterday on the show, the Royals are going to protect their young pitchers. Just 81 pitches. Later in the year, he's going to throw more than 81, so don't freak out about that. Then Colin Snyder, Jake Brintz, Josh Dumont, and Scott Barlow combined for scoreless relief the rest of the way for the final four innings, allowing just one hit. Barlow got the save, and the bullpen now has gone 17 and a third straight scoreless. That reminds me of a bullpen back in 14 and 15. Brings back warm and fuzzy feelings if you're a Royals fan. And the Royals won their third in a row. They're back to 500. They win last night over the Twins 2-0. Just your regular 2-0 win. Royals pitching holds the Twins to 5 hits. The Royals offense scores their 2 runs via double play ball in the first and a bunt, RBI bunt by Adamant Tomasi to beat the shift in the fifth, as you heard just a moment ago. And the Royals, believe it or not, are just a half game out of first place. So we've gone from they'll never lose to they'll never win again to now they're going to win the division. I love it. We've only played 10 games. I have the whole gamut of emotions already as a Royals fan. Royals 5-5, a half game out of first. Twins fall to 4-8. Royals and Twins will finish their 3-game set today, this afternoon, 1:10 at the K. Zach Greinke looking for his first win. He's been pretty good his first two starts. ERA at 2.45. Perhaps the Royals can get the bats going as the Royals have a chance to sweep the Twinkies and go above 500. And who knows, come tomorrow, might be alone in first place in the American League Central. It's possible. So exciting news for the Royals. Wasn't a lot of excitement offensively, but the defense, as we said, is a staple of this team. The bullpen has looked really good. If the starting pitching would come around, you know the offense will eventually come around. I'm not really worried about that. The Royals do have some things to be encouraged by, no doubt. And we shall see how they move going forward. All right, Dusty, local sports, have an athlete of the week, and also local sports, whether it be today mainly in regards to everything that's going on.
Yeah, we'll go through the schedule real quick for today. First, the Beloit baseball team is at Southeast Saline today, an NCAA doubleheader slated to begin at 3 o'clock this afternoon. And softball for Beloit also at Southeast, and that's set to start at 3:30 with the doubleheader this afternoon. Sylvan Lucas Lincoln softball is hosting Republic County at 4:30 today. Also, high school golf and a makeup, the Minneapolis Invitational going on today at 3 o'clock. Beloit from the area competing there. And also in a makeup tournament, the Chase Invitational at 3 o'clock this afternoon, Tipton and Sylvan. And Lucas scheduled to be there in Chase. Track and field, Concordia is at the Sterling Invitational this afternoon at 3 o'clock, and competing at the Sterling Invitational will be our athlete of the week. Concordia senior Toby Wallmeyer has been named the NCCastSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athlete of the Week. He has had a superb start to the track and field season for the Concordia Panthers. In all, he secured 9 gold medals, 1 silver, and 1 bronze for the first 4 meets of the season. Tuesday at the Lions Club Invitational in Belleville, Wallmeyer brought home 3 golds, winning the 100-meter dash in 12:43, the 224.17, and running the second leg of the 4x400-meter relay team that finished first place at 3:43.43. Top meet of the year for Wallmeyer was the home Concordia Invitational April 8th, in which he took 4 gold medals, 2 individually, 2 on relays. He winning the 100 and 200, and also second leg on both of those relays, 4x1 and 4x4, all taking golds. Wallmeyer also took first place medals at the Buff Invite at Republic County April 1st, winning the 100 and 200-meter dashes, and on April 14th at Smoky Valley, he took silver in the 200 and bronze in the 100. So, again, a great start for Toby Wallmeyer, the senior at Concordia, our NCKSSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athlete of the Week. We need your help in finding the athlete of the week. For more information, you can visit ncksports.com. You can nominate an athlete from any school sport. So get on the website, find out more, and send us your nominations here during the spring sports season for athlete of the week. Again, ncksports.com.
Listen, I'm just going to tell you right now, Toby's dad, Mike, did not run that fast. And
absolutely not.
Mike, I don't think, was ever a athlete of the week. And no offense to Mike, he was Mike is a very smart dude that played sports.
Definitely has it up here. There's no question about that.
Very smart dude. Mike now was a head coach at Concordia with the girls program, and now at Chapman, and recently remarried. And wish him the best of luck with all of that. So congratulations to the Wallmeyer family there for being recognized for athletic achievement that Mike probably wasn't so much when he was in high school. But that's okay. We each have our strengths. Let's see. I put a tease out there every night before the sports ticket on social media. Todd goes, why have you guys not been covering the Laker playoff games? You know, that is a stunner. I don't know why we haven't covered that. That's unfortunate that we've not really. I can't believe that we overlooked that. If you don't get the joke, people, the Lakers didn't make the playoffs 33-49, but was not a failure, according to LeBron. So that's just embarrassing to make a comment like that, in my opinion, but whatever. Okay, baseball, how about this? We talked about during the lockout that there were reports that the owners who locked out the players, so it was not a strike, that the owners were talking about maybe waiting all the way until starting the season May 1st, because April games, there were so many games they could actually not have and still fulfill the TV agreement with the networks and not have to pay anything back. Once they got past about 20 or 25 games that would be canceled, then it would come back and start to bite the owners. So they were like, well, listen, if we miss 2, 3, 4 weeks of April, it's not going to be that big a deal. Why? Because attendance is typically not that good in April. Why is that? Well, weather is cold. Maybe people are still trying to get into baseball mode, so forth and so on. Well, then there's the Oakland Athletics. 2 days ago on Tuesday, the A's beat the Baltimore Orioles 2-1. So what's the big deal? The A's won in front of the A's' smallest home crowd in 42 years. You want to guess what the attendance was? In case you don't know the story. If you know the story,
I'm just going to guess. I'm going to say like 8,000.
8,000. That would have been superb.
Yeah, it would.
Oh, no.
3,748. It was the smallest with fans at the Coliseum since 1980 when they had 3,200. But guess what? Yesterday, they were at home again, the A's, and they had even worse attendance. 2,703 people were at Oakland Coliseum to watch the A's lose 1-0 to the Baltimore Orioles. The A's are 7-6 on the season, so it's not like they're horrendous. The Reds are 2-11. The Rangers are 2-8, and the Rangers have a brand-new ballpark. And there lies the issue, right there. I did a lot of research on this last night to prepare for the show, because I'm sitting there going, listen, this is not normal. This is not normal. A team with a winning record, a team that has been very good, that seems to be kind of like a poor man Tampa Bay Rays team, where they're always competitive, even when they trade off their best players. They draft well. They develop well. Of course, you had a movie made all about, you know, Billy Ball. Moneyball is what it was called. Brad Pitt starring as Billy Bean. The A's just haven't had a lot of success in the playoffs. As we know, they should have won the wild card in 14 against the Royals, up 7-3 with John Lester on the hill, and couldn't get it done. Royals rallied and won, and of course went on to Game 7 of the World Series in 14, won it all 15. We know what happened there. The A's are not a also-ran. They're not a retread. They're not an expansion team in regards to, you know, a Marlins that came in and won a couple World Series titles and then blew everything up in the offseason, had fire sales. The A's are not like that. Now, they do have the second lowest payroll in baseball. The only one with lower payroll is the Baltimore Orioles, who they happen to be playing right now. And so I was like, this is not normal. I know there's something to this. And I had heard through the rumor mill over the last year or so that I knew there was the A's were wanting a new baseball park. I knew that. And the reason I share this story with you, ladies and gentlemen, is because you may be saying, why are you talking about the Oakland A's and a brand new baseball park? What does that have to do with North Central Kansas? What does it have to do with the sports ticket? I mean, why are you talking about a West Coast team? Okay, well, hang with me. Let me connect the dots a little bit here. The Kansas City Royals and the Kansas City Chiefs both are in the same complex, the Truman Sports Complex in Kansas City. The Kansas City Chiefs recently let it out on purpose. This is a complete political move by the Chiefs, saying that at the end of their lease at Arrowhead, that they need to obviously come up with a plan. And the lease, I think, is either 2030 or 2032, which is plenty of time. But yet you got to plan ahead. We're 10 years away. That, you know, the Chiefs, there's talk about, well, for the Royals, there's been talk about having to build a brand new downtown stadium. There was talk of that before they renovated Kauffman Stadium last time with the Glass family. And Jackson County taxpayers had to foot some of that bill. The Chiefs had renovations at Arrowhead. Jackson County taxpayers foot some of that bill. In fact, more for the Chiefs than the Royals. And so the Chiefs leaked it out recently that, you know, we'd be open to moving to Kansas. Well, of course you would. If you can put another player into the game, it's just like if you're trying to sell your house, all right, and you've only got one person interested, you're going to do everything you can to get a second or a third party interested. Why? Because then they just bid against each other. The price goes up and you get what you want, right? All you need is two people that are interested in your house to drive the price up. That's all you need. Well, same thing here. If you want the best possible deal for the Kansas City Chiefs, you need two entities to be highly involved. Well, this is simple. The two entities involved are the state of Missouri and the state of Kansas, all right? It's Jackson County in Missouri, and it would be, of course,
Johnson County.
It would be Wyandotte, where the Speedway is and where Legends is. That's where they're talking about. And so I don't think the Chiefs have any real conviction of going to Kansas. I truly don't believe that at all. I will say, though, by them leaking that out, is that, listen, if Missouri doesn't step up to the plate and Kansas just blows us away, that's when they'll come to Kansas. But it's going to have to be an unbelievable, sensational deal. And already, Kansas lawmakers are already suddenly now legalizing sports betting. Kansas is now suddenly getting a boost because of the words of Mark Donovan, the Chiefs president. 80% of sports betting revenue in Kansas would go towards a new stadium, of course, is to what? Draw the Chiefs to come to Kansas. So it's a brilliant move by Mark Donovan in the Kansas City Chiefs organization. It is brilliant. It's called business. Now, people there in Jackson County says, what the hell do you want from me? I keep paying, I pay, you renovate, you keep milking us, you this and this and this. At some point, you want to say, enough's enough. I'm not going to vote for any kind of taxpayer initiative to fund a brand new stadium, whether it's right here or downtown Kansas City or whatever the case may be, right? So, but then if you do that, you lose your team to the Kansas side. Is that good or bad? I think you could still travel across state lines. There's no border agents there at the Kansas-Missouri state line to prevent you from going to Kansas, last I checked. So Kansas is going to put their best foot forward. I'm sure Missouri is going to put their best foot forward eventually. But it speeds up the process of trying to get something done to where maybe the Chiefs simply are going to renovate. Maybe they're going to build a brand new stadium in the parking lot and blow up Arrowhead. Maybe they're going to have a stadium downtown. Maybe they're going to go to Kansas. Who knows what they're going to do? But it's going to be fun to follow this for a while. So once again, you say to yourself, well, wait, I don't understand the point. You were talking about the Oakland Athletics, and now you jump to the Kansas City Chiefs. Well, their neighbor, all right, is the Kansas City Royals. The Kansas City Royals, before they had renovations and the Glass family and Jackson County taxpayers paid for part of that, there was a strong push by a lot of people, including media members and sports talk radio in Kansas City, to have a stadium downtown like a lot of ballparks. Denver has it downtown. It's pretty cool. Coors Field. Cleveland has a downtown park, so forth and so on. And so they said downtown would be great for baseball because, one, you don't have to have an 80,000-seat stadium. It could be 30, 35, 40,000. Of course, parking, to me, still would be an issue no matter what when you're downtown. I think that's true of anywhere you go. Mm-hmm. And so there was all this talk about, well, what about the Royals going downtown? Now, since that has happened, and the Royals did not go downtown. They renovated Kauffman Stadium. I don't know when their lease runs up. Probably about the same time the Chiefs. I don't know for sure. I'm guessing it is.
I don't know. They're both 2031 is the last year.
I think that's what I'd seen the other day. I think that's right. I know it's 2030 or 2031 or 2032. So roughly 8 to 10 years from now. Okay? Forgive us for not having an exact year, but it's somewhere in there. So you got to make some decisions. The Chiefs already put their foot forward and they threw it out there. Hey, Kansas, look at us. Consider us. You know, put your best foot forward. Make an offer, basically. The Royals have not said that publicly. However, the Royals are under new ownership since the renovations. John Sherman is the figurehead, but there are multiple guys that have a percentage stake in the Royals now, including a guy named Patrick Mahomes. So the Royals, before long, are going to do the exact same thing the Chiefs are. They're going to be like, well, hey, if you can, you know what? If you could build an Arrowhead and a Kauffman Stadium in Kansas with all that room and land over there, we could have all this room for parking, and that would be ideal. And basically, we're just moving it from the east side of Kansas City to the west side of Kansas City. That's all we're doing. Wouldn't that be cool? Right off the highway, everybody would see it. Oh, we already do that, but it would be brand new. Or maybe Kansas City Royals will go downtown in 10 years, whatever the case may be. Okay, so here's how it ties to the Oakland Athletics, and this is why things are interesting. I don't think there's any danger of the Chiefs or the Royals leaving Kansas City. Now, there was for a while talk about the Royals maybe leaving Kansas City when Ewan Kauffman was going to sell the team, of course, or hand it over, whatever, and he was getting up there in age and health issues and so forth. There was concerns David Glass would come in, move the team to Arkansas, wherever it may be, and closer to Walmart Supercenter and whatever headquarters. That didn't happen. Luckily, it worked out for Royals fans. I don't think the Royals are going any... I don't think fans listening right now to the show right now and to my voice need to freak out and go, oh my God, are you saying the Royals are going to leave Kansas City? You tell me the Chiefs are going to leave Kansas City? Yeah, I can't see Missouri to Kansas City, Kansas, maybe, but they're not going to leave the area. However, what's interesting to me about what we're seeing, and we're seeing this in sports, and if you watch and read, watch the 30 for 30 documentary on the Raiders and Al Davis and how he moved the team multiple times and, in fact, had a deal in place in a small suburb of I believe, Oakland, Irwindale. Believe it or not. I mean, this was like a town of 10,000 people. But he had a deal. He used it as leverage. He never was going to go there. Eventually, the Raiders, of course, as we know, went from Oakland to L.A. to Oakland. And now where are they? They are in Las Vegas. And Las Vegas is a big player in this whole equation as well. So let's get back to the Oakland Athletics. Why is the attendance so bad? This is how I tie it to the Royals. The Royals' attendance hasn't been great so far. Part of that, I think, is the TV deal. If you don't get to watch them and you don't if you have internet providers and you do streaming and you've cut the cord with cable companies and you think or you are saving money, you got to decide, is it worth me to pay extra to go back to the cable or satellite or whatever or keep what I got or pay some kind of extra fee to somehow access the Royals? And if they're not awesome, maybe I'll save my money because it's a long season. I see the highlights. Younger generations, like, I don't need to sit and watch a whole nine-inning game on TV anyway. I got better things to do, like play on my phone. And so, and I mean that with no disrespect, you can get the highlights right off your phone. You can skip 4 hours of baseball, and same thing with NBA playoffs. You can skip 2.5 hours of NBA playoffs and go watch the highlights or listen to us, and we'll recap you the next day. So the younger generation is more of a, we need to get this information as soon as possible. Give me the short Cliff Notes version. That's really what that is. Mm-hmm. And so sports got to have to adapt. Major League Baseball's one of the sports that isn't adapting, and we could talk about that another day. But when getting back to the point of attendance and fan interest, the Royals right now, their attendance has not been good. It is early, and granted, a winner solves everything. And even the Royals have not had great teams, they still somehow put together a million people that attend the games each year, maybe even 1.5. When they started winning a lot, it was up to 2 million. So they got fan support. We know that. So will the Royals ever get down to 2,703 people that are going to attend a game? I think it's possible if you got taxpayers that are ticked off that don't want to keep funding a stadium, and the Royals threaten to leave Missouri and go to Kansas. I think it is possible. I think it's less likely because I think you got enough people from Kansas that would come over and go to the game. So here's where the Oakland A's are the situation they're in. And you hope that the Royals never get to this situation, although they were kind of close there at one point. Why are people not going to the Oakland A's games? They have a winning team. They have an organization that's been winning consistently for the last 10, 20 years. Well, fans have basically given up, and here's why. For a while now, the Oakland A's have been working with the city of Oakland, whatever you want to call it, with politicians, government officials, so forth and so on, trying to get a brand new $1 billion domed waterfront park. All right, near, I think it's called Howard's Terminal or something like that in that Oakland area. And there have been people that have fought back in those areas saying, we don't want to have to pay for it. They've been, I think, even a vote on some of it, too. And so it's kind of been in limbo. It's not officially dead, but it ain't going anywhere. Now, to complicate matters, Oakland Coliseum is a dump. Oakland Coliseum was built in 1962. It's an absolute dump. To give you an idea of how bad a dump it is, there was a drainage issue in 2018, and raw sewage came through the locker rooms. To give you an idea of what a dump it is, mice were found in the soda machine. Dead mice. Okay, and that's just a couple. They last year they had the last season that the Raiders played in the Coliseum. That was another reason why the Raiders left, by the way, and went to Las Vegas, was that there was a lighting delay because the lights were so outdated and were not working, and it caused a delay to the game. And so, I understand both sides here. If you're the Oakland A's owner and you're top brass of Oakland, you're like, we need a brand new stadium. We do. And we provide a lot to your city and your town. If you go in with us, help fund the stadium. I don't know what all the particulars are, what the percentages are. And that's kind of what the Royals and Arrowhead did, is there was a percentage Jackson County voted on and passed to pay. I think it was 50% on one of them. Not as much. I think the Royals didn't get as much as the Chiefs did, if I remember correctly. So the A's want a new ballpark. But it's nothing's happening. It's not going anywhere. I was having this conversation with my 15-year-old son because he brought this story to my attention about the horrible attendance. I said, there's got to be more to it. He said, well, I'll bet you they go to Vegas. He didn't even research. He just like, I bet they go to Vegas. And I did some research. Yep.
Yeah.
Oakland A's officials and owners and top brass have made 12 trips to Southern Nevada to go to Las Vegas, where the Raiders, who used to be in Oakland, went to Las Vegas, and it's going very well for the Raiders so far. Brand new stadium. There's lots of politicians wanting to draw professional sports teams to Vegas, and of course now, with sports betting being allowed more and more in professional sports, NFL opening the whole basket, you know, all kinds of ads for DraftKings, FanDuel, and everything else, that it's certainly more doable than it would have been, say, 5-10 years ago. It makes sense. So the A's are like, dude, you ain't giving us a stadium in Oakland. We're tired of waiting. You fans aren't coming because you know it's a dump. We don't want to put money into a dump. We want a new stadium, which I understand that. I understand fans going, I don't want to go to a dump. I understand fans not wanting to go in to support a team that they know is going to leave anyway, it seems like. Mm-hmm. And so what do you get? 2,703 people at a Major League Baseball game in Oakland, California. There's the reason why you get to this point. Let's just pray we don't get to that point with, say, the Royals somewhere down the line.
Yeah.
Small market teams.
Yeah. It'd take a lot.
It would.
For the Royals to get there. They've had a lot of really, really bad seasons of baseball, and people still stuck with them for the most part, right?
But if you alienate your taxpayer base in Missouri, what might happen?
Yeah, you can't sit here and you couldn't have let Kauffman just sit as it was, or Royal Stadium just sit as it was for this long and so long and not do anything about it.
I'll give you an example.
So they've done that.
I'll give you an example. If the Jackson County taxpayers voted that thing down, the Royals might be where the A's are today.
Yeah. And I think the saving grace for teams like the Royals and Chiefs are, I think there's legit interest in Legends and people out there in Wyandotte County to have them there.
Oh, absolutely.
And to keep them there, and there's room to keep them there, right? That can develop a lot of ways still. And so I think that's something that could save them from being, you know, all the brass are going to Vegas, and like the Oakland, you know, like saves them from all the brass heading off to a different city to see if we can move, right? And I think that's something that, and I don't think the Chiefs would ever get to the point where the Raiders and A's are, to be completely honest.
No, I don't either.
The interest and the boost to everything that does kind of, I think, outweighs kind of what the taxpayers think they're going to have to pay. But again, it could be a situation where Jackson County does get tired of it, and it goes to Wyandotte County, Kansas, or it goes to you know, North Kansas City or somewhere out there that would be interested in it, and in a different county of Missouri, right? And so I don't think that we'd have to worry about that part of it, but I hope that it never gets to the point where it does get to that, thinking about leaving.
The interesting wild card part to the Kansas City equation is, if you're a Jackson County taxpayer, and I have to talk to one, that would be interesting, are you really going to lose sleep if the Royals move to Wyandotte County in Kansas City, Kansas? Because you can still go to the games.
Yeah.
It isn't going to affect your bottom dollar. In fact, it might save you money by not having to pay taxes to help fund the stadium. However, what it does do is that it's a huge boost for
your
economy.
The economic boost for home Chiefs games.
Yeah, right. And what about jobs?
The Royals are okay, but when you think about the Chiefs, man, all those people that come into town.
Yeah, and what about your jobs? Like, if you're a Jackson County taxpayer, but your job is working in the hotel industry, or you work for actually, you know, something tied to the Chiefs or the Royals, and then they move to Wyandotte, you might actually have to move yourself, or it impacts your bottom line that you may not even understand. It's a trickle-down effect.
Yeah.
So it is interesting. I want to ask Jason to bring him in the conversation. If, you know, if the Nebraska Cornhuskers, obviously, if they would say, that's it with Lincoln Memorial, it's a dump, and we're going to, and I know this is a university thing, mm-hmm. although they're like a pro franchise in Nebraska, and they said, listen, we've got to build a brand new football stadium here in Lincoln, Nebraska, and you lived in Lincoln, Nebraska. Would you be, and of course, I know you don't know what the percentage is, but let's just say it's a, I mean, let's just be broad here. Let's be nice and big and bold. If you were told a 1% hike on sales tax, 1% hike. So if you're paying 8% on everything, it goes 9%. I'm just doing a hypothetical. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if it's possible tied to the university. But let's just say, hey, there's a tax initiative. We're going to raise property taxes by 2% for everybody, and we're going to raise your sales tax by 1% on every single item you buy at the grocery store or wherever else to fund a brand new college football stadium in Lincoln, Nebraska. Would you be on board?
If there was a solid plan to it, if there was a solid spot for it and all that kind of stuff, yes. Because I think a lot of, you know, when you're talking about the 1% and mm-hmm. the smaller increases, I think a lot of those work out.
Mm-hmm.
You get brand new shiny motels and you get brand new shiny restaurants and you get a nice area. If you do it right, if you get the right area and have room for this stuff, you see that economic boom with the tax revenues and stuff coming back in. So I would go for it.
See, a lot of people would say maybe not, because 1% is significant. It sounds small, but most initiatives that you see are a quarter of a percent tax mm-hmm. increase, and usually you get a lot mm-hmm. of times it's yeah. the older people. Yeah. No! I can't have my taxes go any higher. And you know what? You have a right to say that, because it is your money. Or half a percent. But we talk 1%. That may seem small to you, to other people. But, you know, that's a dollar for every 100 you spend. And, you know, that's 10 for every 1,000. And that's 100 for every 10,000. And it's, I mean, you start doing the math. If you actually check exactly where you spend money, you might be surprised at how much money extra that is out of your pocket by paying an extra percent. Now, do you cut back a percent and not buy the ice cream? And you get the off-brand ice cream right. instead yeah. of the Blue right. Bunny or something. Who knows? But anytime you bring up raising taxes on somebody, people are going to say, what's in it for me? You know, we had it in Beloit where we had a tax increase in regards to a proposal to the voters in regards to the brand new pool at Chautauqua Park. And it got supported, it got passed, but it, from what I remember, is that more the older generation was more opposed to it. The younger generation saw more value in it because the older generation is like, well, how am I going to directly benefit from this? Same thing if you're a Jackson County taxpayer or if you're a taxpayer in Lincoln, Nebraska. Or I'm not a Nebraska Cornhusker fan. I don't go to games. I don't care. I'm not a sports fan. Why do I want to 1% sales tax for them to have a brand new stadium when they got a nice stadium already, even though they've not been there, don't know how bad it's gotten.
Yeah.
Same thing with Kauffman Stadium Arrowhead. Why am I, as a Wyandotte County taxpayer or a Jackson County taxpayer, why do I want to pay more? Why do I need to pay more? I thought these guys are making billions of dollars. It's a billion-dollar industry. Why can't they fund it themselves? Which I have asked that question myself many times.
Because needs to be, yeah, I would, as a taxpayer, be like, y'all need to put more of your own in
here,
and then I'll support it.
But if you have another entity that is willing to give you more, thus they don't have to.
That's
where
you're in trouble, yeah.
And that's why Mark Donovan throws it out there loosely.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, Kansas would be an option. Brilliant comment.
I'm going to say this, with the back where I came from, Kearney, where I lived for a while, they did like a quarter percent tax or something like that mm-hmm. on restaurants mm-hmm. for a sports complex.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my goodness, you would have thought.
They raised it 10%.
Yeah. And people were up in arms, but it passed. And it was supposed to be a 10-year note and supposed to do that. It paid for itself in, I think, half the time that it took, that it was supposed to. And then they get this extra 5 years. They kept the tax. And then so now the city has this extra money to do, you know, to help with the upkeep of this, of the sports complex and everything. It worked out fine.
Yeah.
You know, you're right. A 1% is a bigger tax increase than, say, a quarter percent on just restaurant going out to eat.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, there is a give and take there. And you're right. There's a difference between a university and, say, a professional where, you know, you're dealing with multi-billionaires who, you're right, should put a lot of their own money into this.
But you think about it, you know, people accuse owners of being greedy and so forth, but if you...
They're just like us.
I mean, think about this for a second. If any of us go to eat at a nice steakhouse. All right, let's say we go to a really nice steakhouse, and the steaks are $30 steaks. And some people are like, that's not that expensive. Some people are like, wow, that's super expensive. Mm-hmm. And we're planning on buying it, right? We're planning on, we're like, we got the money. We can afford to do it. Now, maybe it's not something you do on a regular basis. Maybe it is. And some Joe Blow or whoever offers to pay for our meal.
You're going to take it.
You're probably going to take it. That's the simple and dumb it down. That's what's happening here. Like, if Kansas is willing to pay more to help fund a stadium, and Jackson County in Missouri doesn't want to move forward, and then the owner's like, well, why am I going to put more money into an existing stadium that isn't brand new, but I can get a brand new one, and I can get Kansas to pay half the freight or whatever it might be, maybe even more. Who knows what Kansas is willing to do, especially if they legalize sports betting, and people go nuts betting on sports, and they might get more revenue than ever dreamt before. Well, hello, if you're a billionaire owner, but you got somebody willing to help pay the freight, you'd be a fool not to take them up on that. So when somebody's willing to do it, like, for instance, you might have a dollar amount in your head when you sell your house. Like, I want to sell my house for $225,000. And somebody comes in and goes, I'll buy it for you for $275,000. Done! I don't need, I was happy with $225,000, but where do I sign up? So you're going to, if somebody offers to buy you a meal, more than likely you're going to say, yeah, that's great, even though they might be less financially off as you are. They might need that money more than you do. You might be loaded, and somebody comes up and goes, hey, LeBron, I love you. You're my greatest. I love you. You're the greatest player of all time. LeBron, let me buy you the steak dinner. You don't think he can afford it? What's LeBron going to say? No, man. It's good. I got this. He might. But odds are, if like anybody else, he'd be like, why not? Why not?
I mean, all these,
I got an extra $30 to go buy some champagne or something.
They all take the swag bags at these award shows.
Sure,
you just take it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And when people sit here and listen to this show, go, well, I wouldn't do that. Yeah, you would.
Yeah, you would.
Yeah, you would. Yeah. Come on now. Be honest. So that's interesting. What's going on in Oakland? And it sounds like basically the top brass and the owners of Oakland have kind of checked out of Oakland after trying quite a bit. And the fans have basically checked out and said, we know that you're leaving anyway. And this place, and even if I wanted to support your team, it's a dump anyway. And so people aren't going.
Yeah.
Now, I would guess the attendance will get better as it warms up. Although in Oakland, I'm guessing the weather's not that bad. But interesting, and you hope to goodness gracious that never happens with the Royals down the line. NBA playoffs continue last night, and a former Jayhawk hits a big shot.
Way outside near the arc. Green, they angle something toward the rim. It gives to a beat. He'll turn. Got him!
Joel Embiid, the 7-foot center, former Jayhawk for a year. He helped rally the Sixers. They were down 17 last night in Toronto in Game 3. Embiid, the game winner with 0.9 remaining in overtime. It was a 3-104-101, and they lead that best of 7, 3-0. Embiid finished with a game-high 33 and added 13 rebounds. And when Harden joined the Philadelphia 76ers, James Harden, he's known for the step-back three. And Embiid joked about how he was going to need to learn how to, you know, hit a step-back three. And when I first heard that, I thought, that's just dumb. I mean, seriously, you're 7 foot. What are you doing? Why do you need a step-back fadeaway three? And I still don't think he needs it. But he hit one, I guess, recently. And my son, him and I have argued about this, my oldest, he goes, Dad, see, he hit that three. That's what he's been working on. I said, son, he hit threes before Harden came here. But I said, that's not a step-back three. That's a three gliding to his left that he hit to win the game against Toronto. I said, I'll ask you the question. Why isn't he in the paint and they just lob it into him and makes a little hook from 6 feet? Going to be the better shot? Instead, they're rolling him out to the three-point line in a tie game in overtime to shoot a three. Now, he made it. That works out great, but he's not a great three-point shooter. He's 7 foot tall, can dominate in the paint. Barkley said it 1,000 times, why aren't you inside more often? He's not saying Embiid can't shoot threes. He's just saying, probably should be inside more often. I agree with Barkley. And so Embiid's like, well, I'm going to learn how to hit the step-back three-pointers. You know, Harden, you understand it. He's shorter. He's like 6'4", 6'5". He needs a little separation. You're 7 feet tall and you're athletic. Why in the world do you need to figure out how to hit a fadeaway step back three? And last night he hit a three, but it wasn't step back fadeaway. And my son goes, see, that's why he needs to learn that. I go, no, he doesn't. He's 7 feet tall, son. I said, you're 5'7". You need to develop that. But if you're 7 foot, no. Your butt should be in the paint and in the post, especially against smaller guys, instead of settling for threes. You don't think if I'm Draymond Green at 6'6", and I'm guarding Joel Embiid, you don't think I'm more than happy to let Embiid shoot a 24-footer? You want to work on a fadeaway step back? Be my guest. I mean, I think it's the sexy part of the game. I know it's a fun shot. It's a fun play. And I think it's Embiid having fun. And Embiid loves to have fun. So I don't want to knock Embiid having fun. But you're 7 feet tall and you can dominate in the paint. I'm okay with the, hey, you know, transition. You happen to be on the three-point line and you just catch it, spot up, and hit it. I'm okay if you run a pick and roll and they leave you and they're packing it in and they're daring you to shoot the three and you shoot it. I get it. But you need a fadeaway step back three at 7 foot and you're an all-star and all-pro? I don't think you need that. Maybe work on a dominant hook shot like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You'll never need the fadeaway three.
It's like I don't know how to word this.
All I know
this,
is I'm 7 foot tall. I'm not working on step back fadeaway threes. That's just
yeah,
not
and there's obviously a point to that, but there's the sure. game is so different now that I feel like there's a lot of teams that aren't taking advantage of height, right? Like
I agree with
that
you.
Aren't taking advantage of that. I don't know if you saw Kyle Kuzma's tweet last night though. After Embiid hit that shot,
I did not.
He said, "I know we're numb to a lot of things in this society, but a 7 foot center just cashed a three to win a playoff game, MVP yep. one of one." And I'm like, obviously, this guy did not watch Dirk Nowitzki play basketball.
He's six. He was seven foot. Yeah.
And maybe
But he wasn't considered a center.
Right? But in today's NBA,
yes.
Joel Embiid's not a center.
No.
He's not.
He's a forward.
In the way you would consider the old school way of calling a center,
right.
Joel Embiid is not a center.
There's really no centers in the league, really much.
It was a power forward, technically, is what his position was called.
Right.
And so, but I'm sitting here like, I think Dirk Nowitzki might be partially to blame for all this, right?
Yes.
For where we're at in today's
NBA.
You
go even further back. Larry Bird was 6'9".
And he's 6'9", and in Magic, too, right? They're tall guys that were out taking deep shots, and Kobe, you know, was 6'8", whatever, you know, guys that have a fair amount of height that are basically playing guard.
Sure.
I think Dirk was the one that kind of changed the entire mentality
right.
We got a 7-footer out here just cashing threes. Mm-hmm. But Dirk could go inside if he needed him.
He posted
and hit,
a lot.
And he'd turn around and hit that fadeaway just way over everybody's mm-hmm. head, you know.
Yes.
And so now what's the trendy shot is the step back now, right? So now everybody wants to learn to step back. And
sure.
and so
Curry
it's just like
it
I really feel like Dirk was maybe partially to blame for where we're at now. But obviously if you think that he's an MVP because he's 7 foot and made a three to win a playoff game, Dirk is trying to cash in on a lot of that.
First of all, Kuzma's too young, so he doesn't really
exactly.
grow up with Nowitzki. And by the way, it's always brilliant, and it's well done by you, Dusty. When in doubt, blame the German guy.
When in doubt, blame the guy that played for the Mavericks.
Just blame the German. Yeah.
If Joel wants to work on a step back 18-footer,
yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah,
that's a 7-footer that gives them room to shoot over
sure.
everybody.
I get
great.
That.
Great. Step back threes, no.
No.
Two, maybe I think on game winners, I think if you asked the guys that get a lot of game-winning opportunities, they'd rather have a little space
yes.
than a shorter distance. So if they get a good, clean look
right.
from 20
right.
instead of a contested one from 10, I think they'd rather have that. But so that might answer last night's shot. But, man, yeah, Joel doesn't need the step back three. The catch and shoot three,
yes.
it's nice to have another tool in your toolbox. But
right.
Yeah.
Well, if I'm Nick Nurse in Toronto, I can live with that shot last night.
Yeah.
I mean, he made it,
but
that's better than, you know, they throw alley-oop and he catches it 2 feet from the bucket and dunks it to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
It was a tie game. They didn't even need a three, by the
right.
way. But anyway, the Celtics rallied from a double-digit deficit last night. They were down 65-55. They beat the Nets 114-107. Celtics lead that best of 7-2-0. Seven of the eight Celtics that played hit double figures. Jaylen Brown with 22. Kyrie Irving, fresh off his $50,000 fine and flipping the bird to everybody in Boston, he had just 10 points last night, so he disappeared in the biggest game of their season. But also, Kevin Durant scored 27, and you may say, and this is where stats are deceiving, Kevin Durant scored 27. You look at the box score real quick, and you see his 27. Like, oh, Durant had a decent game. No, he didn't. He had to shoot 18 free throws to get to his 27 points.
Mm-hmm.
He was 4 of 17 from the floor for the game. That's horrific. And he was 0 for 10 in the second half, and he looked tired. He went 9 of 24 in game one. I mean, they've said that Kevin Durant is indefensible. So far in the series, he is defensible. And if he's defensible, the Nets have no chance in this series.
No chance.
No chance.
I didn't get to
they shut down both their stars last night.
I didn't get to see the game itself, but I saw a few tweets that said he wasn't just missing three-pointers at the end of the shot clock. He was missing mid-range stuff, which usually is where he's just
he's tired. He's good there. Yeah.
So if he's tired. Missing that kind of stuff, face-ups and post-ups and that kind of stuff, then he's either not right or tired or something. And
they're wearing him down.
Yeah.
Because the Celtics are one of the best defensive teams in the league, even without Robert Williams. And you've got, Tatum's a good defender, and he's 6'10". People don't understand how tall Jason Tatum is. Jaylen Brown, they've got long defenders. Marcus Smart is the defensive player of the year as a guard, and he's a pest. You rotate different guys on a guy like Kevin Durant, and you make him work on both ends of the floor, because obviously Brown and Tatum can score. Suddenly you wear the guy down. And the Nets, this is what happens when you get these super teams. They had Harden, Irving, and Durant didn't work out. But even with Irving and Durant, what happens sometimes with these super teams is you spend all this money and then you don't have a lot of depth. And the next thing you know, when your stars don't do well, you got nobody to go to. There is no option number 3 or 4. And, the Bucks may find that out here coming up in a moment as well, because the Bulls beat the Bucks last night. Midway through the second quarter, and I told my son after game one, I said, listen, man, the Bulls are going to make this a series. Mm-hmm. I said, the Bulls were down one with 4 minutes to go in Milwaukee, and their best three players shot 21%, and they still could have won. I said, the Bulls are going to make this a good series. And so I told him last night, it was midway through the second quarter, and the Bulls were up like 8, and I said, the Bulls are going to win tonight. And he goes, they're not going to win 2 games in the series. I said, you want to put your money where your mouth is, son? I said, I'll bet you $5. Yes, this is what we do at home. I said, son, I'll bet you $5. I'll bet you a blizzard at Dairy Queen. Well, what was funny was I said $5, and he goes, $4 or $5 for a large blizzard at Dairy Queen? I said, yes. Or wait, what? That, absolutely. I go, I know you get the premium one. I'll pay extra for the premium. I'll get the regular Oreo that's a little cheaper. That's fine. But let me tell you something. I'll bet you that the Bulls win 2 games. I said, they're going to win tonight, and they're going to win at least one in Chicago. This series is going at least 6 games. And my son said, I'll bet you $1. I go, $1 don't buy you nothing anymore. I don't want to bet $1. Then he says, well, I tell you what, if the Bulls win tonight, he said, how did he put that? I can't remember exactly how he put it, but he said something about the two wins for the Bulls, whatever. So the bottom line is we got it down to a $2 bet. And then I told him, and then the Bulls ended up winning. So it's a good thing he didn't take the bet, because he would have lost, because the Bulls did win last night, 114-110, and DeMar DeRozan had 41. The series is tied at 1 and shifts back to Chicago. The thing that I like about the Bulls is they've got some firepower offensively. They have Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan, and they've got Alex Caruso, who's a great role player, by the way. And now Chris Middleton has a MCL sprain in his knee, suffered in the fourth quarter. The Bucks gave Giannis a ton of money to keep him. It makes sense. They gave a max contract to Chris Middleton. Now, those two guys aren't considered the superstar tandem that an Irving and a Durant is, or a Curry and a Thompson, things like that, right? Embiid and Harden. But the Bucks don't have a lot of depth, because they got money tied up in a couple players. They got the same situation that the Nets have right now. And Drew Holiday's got to come up big now, because Middleton may miss some time.
Times in his career we talked about Drew Holiday's got to do something. And he did.
He did last year
during the finals. He had some games where he stepped up. But
Yeah. So now the Bucks are in trouble. It's everybody's talking about the Suns. And by the way, I have Suns-Bucks as a rematch in the finals was my pick. And now one injury for both teams could change everything. So the Bucks now are going to be maybe down Chris Middleton, go to Chicago. And by the way, Chicago, I think, is better than the Pelicans that the Suns have to face. I think the Suns have a better chance without Booker to still beat the Pelicans than the Bucks do of beating the Bulls without Chris Middleton. Now, Chris Middleton may play. He might not be that bad. But still, it's a concern with one of your top players. But it just goes back to showing you that you can put together super teams, and you can win a title here and there. A lot of times it doesn't work out. But what you do is you put all your eggs in 2 or 3 players' baskets, and then you put together a whole bunch of minimum contracts, or even get some veteran minimum deals, 1 year, $5 million, bring in guys, and you're relying on them. When one of your stars has an off night, gets hurt, gets tired like Durant, and guess what? You don't have the firepower to go against teams that are more complete, like the Boston Celtics. Mm-hmm. And the Celtics actually play defense. The Nets sometimes don't. And then tonight we've got 3 game 3s in the West. Timberwolves host the Grizzlies, series tied 1-1. Jazz Mavericks tied 1-1, 8 o'clock in Utah tonight. Warriors up 2-0. They'll be in Denver for game 3 at 9 o'clock tonight. Now, the stunning news in the sports world came out last night. I'm going to just tell you everything that my son and I talk about. So last night we're on the couch, and my son goes, I don't understand why everybody's so surprised by this. I go, what? He goes, I heard about this a few days ago. I said, son, there is no mainstream media outlet that has said anything about this. Everybody, I said, read Twitter. Every single person, Bill Self and all kinds of people, top media followers of college basketball, coaches are stunned by this. I'm stunned by it. And you know what I'm about to say. Jay Wright, 60? Jay Wright is 60 years old? We're all stunned by this. I saw somebody put that on a Twitter, like, I don't know what's more stunning, that Jay Wright's retiring as a head coach of Villanova or that he's 60. Do you know, it's so funny, my son, and he got me on this one, he says, Dad, Jay Wright's older than Bill Self. I said, he is? He goes, yeah. I go, dude, Bill Self's 59. He goes, well, Jay Wright's 67. I go, I'll bet everything I own that Jay Wright is not 67. And I start to pull it up on Wikipedia because that's the ultimate source for accurate information. And I went to Wikipedia, and just as I'm pulling up, my son goes, well, I don't think he's that old. And then he said 60 right when I saw 60. I said, oh, okay. Because you said 67, and I didn't even close. Yeah. But Jay Wright, there's no way he looks like he's 60. No. He looks younger than Bill Self, and Bill Self is 59. Jay Wright is 60. He's coached for 35 years. A lot of people don't realize that. Jay Wright, the Mr. Dapper Don, he's got the suit. He is so classy. He's a great guy and gives all the credit when he loses, like this year. Who knew that his last game as a head coach was against Kansas in the Final Four? And after the game, he didn't make any excuses about injuries or anything else. He just said KU is a better team. He gave him all the credit, and that's called class. But it stunned college basketball last night that Hall of Fame coach Jay Wright announced he's retiring as head coach after 21 seasons. He's going to transition to a new role, a special assistant to the president. Fordham's Kyle Neptune will take over. Neptune spent 10 seasons on Wright's staff at Villanova before going to Fordham. Wright is 60. He's been the coach of Villanova since 2001. He won two national titles in 16 and 18, and both times had to beat KU to win it all. Of course, 18, he won the Final Four in San Antonio where they crushed KU. Made it to Final Four four times, including this last year when they lost to KU in the semis. And Wright said in a statement, and I quote, over the past 21 seasons, I have had the opportunity to live out a professional dream as a head coach at Villanova. It has been an honor and a privilege to work at Villanova. Now, though, is the time for us to enter a new era of Villanova basketball. After 35 years in coaching, I'm proud to hand over the reins to Villanova's next head coach, end of quote. Wright finishes his career at Villanova with 520 wins, just 197 losses. He has 642 career wins. As many people don't realize, he was head coach at Hofstra for 7 years before he went to Villanova. Wright's successor, who it sounds like Wright helped pick, is Kyle Neptune. He went 16-16 in his first season at Fordham. I've seen people even respect from Kansas City questioning the new guy coming in to take over. And I'm like, you know, Roy Williams didn't have any head coaching experience. I worked out pretty well and went to Kansas. Bill Snyder didn't have a head coaching experience. I worked pretty well at K-State. And you're sitting here going to crack on a guy that at least has head coaching experience
of 1 year.
I think Hubert
Davis was in the national championship this year.
I believe he was.
If I remember right.
I believe you're correct.
Without any head coaching
experience. Now, he's older than this Neptune, I guess.
Yeah.
But still, if John Shire.
Are we not going to question Duke?
John Shire doesn't have.
Question Villanova?
He's taken over. He's not a head coach ever anywhere. Coach K handpicked him. Roy Williams helped pick Hubert Davis. Bill Self will probably handpick whoever's next guy at KU whenever he retires or leaves, and so forth and so on. And Jay Wright knows who's best for this job. So what does some guy who's a good friend of mine in Kansas City goes on Twitter and says they couldn't have done better than Kyle Neptune? Just because you don't know who Kyle Neptune is doesn't mean he isn't a good coach. Just because he went 16-16 at Fordham doesn't mean he's not going to be the right fit. Sometimes you try to go get the flashy guy that has no tie to university whatsoever, see Ron Prince, and it blows up in your face. You get the guy that sells you a whole bunch of goods but can't deliver. So I have no problem. I mean, why not trust Jay Wright? So here's the point I want to get to here. College basketball has changed tremendously in the last year. Three of the most successful active college basketball coaches have retired over the last 13 months. Roy Williams was the first. Hubert Davis took over. Younger guy, right? Coach K, this was his last year, giving it up to a much younger guy.
Mm-hmm.
And now Dre Wright is giving it up to a guy that's a much younger guy. You see the trend here? And it does. I think it's not coincidental.
No,
I think
no.
It totally aligns with the massive shift that we're seeing in college basketball. Sources have indicated that Jay Wright, even though he didn't say it yesterday, like many of his colleagues, simply reached a point where the job wasn't nearly as fun as it used to be because of all the things coaches now have to deal with that didn't used to exist. Name, image, and likeness rights were long overdue. The one-time transfer waiver is fair. Alternative options for high school prospects are great. Social media is fun. But even the coaches who agree with each of those four sentences I just uttered acknowledge that the combination of all of those things has made their jobs more complex and in many ways unappealing. And I'll give you the biggest one. The transfer portal. Absolutely. Because you used to be, and from what I read, Roy Williams, that was one of the biggest reasons why he stepped down, because of his age. And he's like, dude, I have to spend a lot of energy recruiting new guys to fill the spots I have from graduation. Now I've got to re-recruit my guys on my team before I even really go get somebody else. I got to make sure I keep Armando Bacot on my team.
I need to know how many people I get everybody back.
And what happens when I go get four great recruits and then two guys suddenly decide to transfer? Now I got to go back and get two more.
Yeah.
And so the coaches are like, this is, and it is, you know, I don't want to sit here and say that coaches have a raw deal here. These guys are getting paid tons of money. But I will tell you, coaches at this level, they don't work 40-hour weeks. They're working from night and day.
Not if they're successful, they're not.
That's right. Andy Reid, I guarantee you, during the season, is getting about 4 hours of sleep if he's lucky. You know, Bill Snyder, we know he didn't get much sleep. Mm-hmm. I don't think Bill Self gets a ton of sleep either. And so it can wear on you health-wise. Now, granted, you got the best health care in the world because you can afford it. But it is a job that can wear you down, and it is a more complex job. And so I think it's no coincidence not only that these guys have stepped down the last 13 months, but then add to the fact that the guys that are taking over aren't guys that are longtime assistants for 25 years and now going to just slide in like Bill Guthridge did at Carolina, right?
Mm-hmm.
No. What you're seeing is guys that aren't head coaches or barely have head coaching experience, but were under Roy Williams, under Coach K, under Jay Wright, saying these are the guys that understand the animal that they are inheriting, and they're young enough, they have the energy to re-recruit the guys on our team and go get new recruits to add to our team. It totally, totally lines up and makes sense.
Some of the old guard might have already delegated some of this NIL
probably ahead
to,
of time,
to some of the younger assistants and stuff like that.
Right.
So when there is a transition, it just makes sense that these younger guys. And your point about, you know, we're seeing, you know, even though it wasn't the same university and the Scott Drew's keeping his job, but, you know, you had an assistant who was under Scott Drew for a long time, get a job just down the road in K-State. And so far, we all think that's a great hire, and it's been well received from everybody in, or for most people in nationally, too. So, you know, we're starting to see that. If you're under a guy that's achieved something for, you know, that 8, 10, 15-year period,
yeah,
you kind of come with a little bit of respect already built in. So I think Villanova will be fine. Now, will they capture the same type of success they did with Jay Wright? I don't know.
Roy Williams left Kansas, people were like, how can somebody follow up Roy Williams and have that much success? Bill Self's had even more success than Roy Williams.
Right. Villanova might have a series of top 20 years, but never quite make a Final Four, and it's still a successful program, but you just don't hit that second level. Who knows?
We'll find out.
Who knows? We'll find out. You're definitely right. I think the combination of all those four things you listed, I think they're all good individually, but there are potholes, there are landmines with every single one, and I think just the idea of you going to – you have to find 2 or 3 stud recruits every year at these blue blood programs. And then just what seems to be no reason at all, one just up and leaves.
Yeah.
And, you know, now for that kid, there's probably some type of reason. They want to go back home. They just didn't mesh with that coach, whatever it is. That kid probably has a reason. But what from the outside seems like no reason at all, one guy just leaves.
Here's the thing. This is the way it used to be. You had openings on your team, all right? And maybe somebody would leave your team. That's fine. Yeah. But you had to go find the best recruits in America, high school-wise, or you go a JUCO route to fill the gap. Now, when 1,400 players are in the transfer portal, you're skewering this, and you're looking transfer first before getting a high school kid. And that's the thing that's really unfortunate. And I can tell you from experience with SSA out of Manhattan, they have already sent out emails to the 17 and under, the kids that are going to be seniors, saying, listen, there are not as many spots open for scholarships because of the COVID year that everybody gets if they want it, and also because of the transfer portal. Teams, well, look at Kansas. Did Kansas, what big-time freshman played a lot this year for Kansas? Nobody. KJ Adams played a few minutes. Zach Clements did. Pettiford a little bit till he got hurt. Kansas had the exact same team they had last year that played a majority of their minutes. The only difference was Jalen Coleman-Lands, who's 1,000 years old, came in the transfer portal. He had been to like four other teams. He's 25 years old. He was a role player. Remy Martin was played at Arizona State for many years, multiple years, top flight transfer portal guy. So that's the only big changes KU made, and they won a national title. It wasn't from any significant contribution from a high school kid. Now, they got three high school McDonald Americans coming in, including Grady Dick, who used to be a Quitshaw Collegiate. And I think they're like KU fans going, woohoo, we got three McDonald Americans. I'm going to tell you something. It's going to take a few years for these guys to pan out. So KU, if you go the high school route, you're probably going to fall back a little bit the next couple of years. The best way to fix yourself immediately, look at Iowa State. Iowa State went 2-22, went with a whole bunch of transfers. Boom. They went to the Sweet 16. That's the way teams are going to do the quick fix. It's the same way in the National Football League or any professional sport, Major League Baseball. You got holes. You know what the quick fix is? Not to draft a guy and develop him. The quick fix is to spend a ton of money and get that great free agent you think fills your hole and put a whole bunch of money at it. In college basketball, it's not, well, unless you're doing things illegally, you're not throwing a whole bunch of money at it, but what you're doing is you're going with the experienced guy. It's basically the equivalent of drafting a college pitcher versus a high school pitcher. You know, which one's further along? The college pitcher. Which one has more upside? Well, maybe the high school kid, but he's going to take a little further along. And I'm a coach, and I got to win now in some instances. Mm-hmm. I want to win title. Like, if I'm Bill Self, I'm 59, and he already maybe knows I'm only going to coach for 10 more years, and I'm done. Am I really going to want to wait a couple years till Grady Dick and all these high school kids are juniors when we're really going to be awesome? Or am I going to go get a Remy Martin or a Kendrick Davis now from SMU, who was at TCU? SMU averaged 19 a game last year in the American Athletic Conference, who's narrowed down his top five transfer destinations and KU's one of them. Kendrick Davis might be the next Remy Martin for KU. That's where teams are going to go. They're going to look at the transfer portal. But when you have 1,400 people to consider, that's a lot of delegating. And as an older coach like Roy Williams and Coach K, it's like, dude, this has become way too complicated. And Jay Wright's sitting there going, you know what? I used to enjoy playing and coaching basketball. I've been in this business for 35 years, and it's not fun anymore. You know what? I'll hand it to a guy that wants the job. Yeah. And I'll hang on. I'm a hero. We went to the Final Four my last year. I leave the program in great standing. It's successful. There's no tarnish on my legacy. I've won a couple titles. And I can still be involved with the program and advise and not have to go through all the BS that goes with being a head coach. And, oh, yeah, he's probably a smart guy that's banked a lot of money and has 1 million suits in his closet. Okay? He has a building just for his suits.
You're right. And I'm not sure Jay Wright was ever going to be the 70-year-old coach anyway.
A lot of people thought he would because he looked like he was 50.
Right. But I think he had kind of the, you know.
That's why people are surprised. They thought he would coach longer.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, I was surprised to hear he was 60.
Yeah,
you
me
know,
too.
I thought early 50s because
people were not.
He just does it right. He just does everything
he
right.
Does. Yeah,
and,
he's classy.
And so I never would have pegged him as a 70-year-old coach. I would have thought maybe, you know, well, what I thought was when he was going to be 60 a few years down
right,
the road.
Right. See, that's
the
key.
But now he's out at 60. I'm like, okay, it makes a little sense.
That's the key. What
he's going to travel the world. He might do TV.
Yeah,
I've heard
he'd
a little
great on TV.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
And he probably will.
Yeah,
that's a good point you make. Like for me, I never thought he'd coach till he's 70. But I thought he was going to coach another 15 years,
right,
which would have put him at 75 because I thought he was 50. So that's the confusion for everybody.
Yeah.
That's the big surprise.
Yeah, that's every single person that saw that. Like, cause
I finally saw gray hair on him on the sideline this year when they introduced him.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, he's a human. Yeah. He has gray hair.
Yeah, it got shared in our group on Twitter, and Parker was like, yeah, well, he's probably like 65, though. And I was like,
oh, I knew he wasn't.
There's no way he's 65. So I looked it up. I was like, oh, he is 60, though, because I was thinking maybe 55, right?
You know
like,
what I guessed? 52.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
Yeah, when P said 65, I was like, yeah, probably 55. And then I looked it up and 60, just like you said, Wikipedia shows you right there what it is. And he's 60. I'm like, oh,
so
interesting.
So now,
I don't look that good.
No,
38.
I look older than Jay Wright right now. I can tell you that. Of course, I don't know how many kids he has. I have three, and that takes like 10 years off your life for each kid.
He has 15 kids. he's going to be a father.
He's never around home.
Apparently, he's never home. Every single one of them.
Now he's going to be home.
That's what those coaches say.
Listen, if he has 15, yeah, but if he really had 15 kids, obviously he's never home. And now that he retires, let's see a picture of Jay Wright 2 months from now, and he's going to look like he's 85 with 15 kids.
No, but all those coaches say, no, I have 15 kids. Yeah. They're all like sons to me.
Until they transfer and they're dead to me. Right. Yeah, that type of thing. I'll let you go get Pioneer over there, Jason, real quick. Also, by the way, Bill Self now is the only active coach remaining that has multiple titles now.
Yeah.
Coach K had the most with 6, and he stepped aside. Roy before that had, 4 or 5. He stepped aside, and now Jay Wright with 2. So the only active coach with 2 titles in all college basketball. Only one guy in all college basketball right now is an active head coach who has multiple titles is Bill Self.
I'm interested
he
to
is
see,
the dean of coaching.
Yeah, I'm interested to see now how Bill Self goes out and when he goes out, right? Yeah. Is it going to be like this, just surprise everybody, or is he going to let everybody know and have a farewell tour like what Coach K, you know?
That's
like,
what people are joking about. See. Jay Wright, what are you doing? You're doing it all wrong. You get this farewell tour, you get a whole bunch of things. You get a puppy like Coach K got and all this other stuff, and, you know, made it all about him, I felt. I mean, Coach K didn't have
there's,
to do
there's
the
people that you know motivation why they're doing things, and Jay Wright is a guy that doesn't need that validation, I don't think, that doesn't need that I love you and love from everybody in the world, and Coach K is a guy that does.
I mean, I agree
just
with you.
When you know him and
I agree,
you know, see some of the things he says in press conferences and things like that.
Well, and you look at Jay Wright and his demeanor. Like, go back to when they hit the game-winning shot, Chris Jenkins against North Carolina, win the title. It's all over Twitter right today. Mm-hmm. Jay Wright just kind of, he says bang. He apparently says bang. I didn't see that part. But anyway, he just like watches his team win a national title on a last second shot. That's never happened in college basketball history other than the NC State put back against Houston. And amazing game, crazy game. And I'm going nuts, and I didn't even have a dog in the fight. And he just casually walks down like it was a regular season game that they won. You wouldn't even know they won or lost. That's how cool he was.
Yeah.
And he still is. He's not dead. He's still alive. But he's a lot older than we thought, that's for sure. Okay, 2 more things to get to before we end the show. It's a jam-packed show with lots of interesting topics today, at least I think so. In the National Football League, we talk about the Chiefs in the draft, which is a week from today will be the first round, and that'll be April the 28th. And the Chiefs, we know, have 2 picks in the first round, 2 in the second, 2 in the third, 2 in the fourth. They have 4 in the seventh. They have 12 total picks. They will not make 12 draft picks. I think we're all pretty sure of that. They'll make some kind of trade somewhere, somehow. Debo Samuel, who we saw him in the Super Bowl against the Chiefs, and he's an outstanding player, and last year had a historical year. Yesterday, at the age of 26, made a trade demand. He wants out of San Francisco, even though the Niners say they want to pay him. According to multiple reports, it's because Samuel doesn't like the way he's being used in the 49er offense. It's not necessarily the money. Of course, it's mostly the money. We get that.
Mm-hmm.
During the 2021 season last year, Samuel had an unbelievable year. He played both wide receiver and running back. He was a pro bowler. He had 1,400 yards receiving, 6 touchdowns. He ran for 365 and 8 touchdowns. And thanks to those numbers, Samuel became just the 3rd player in NFL history to finish with at least 1,000 receiving yards with at least 5 receiving touchdowns and 5 rushing touchdowns. He also had almost 1,800 yards from scrimmage. He accounted for 28% of the Niners' offense, which was the 4th highest total of any player in the NFL last year. And the Niners, and Kyle Shanahan said it, and John Lynch, the GM and president, have said, we want to keep this core together, the younger guys like Bosa at the end, and they want to keep, of course, Samuel. And they got Trey Lance, who's going to be their quarterback in the near future, maybe this year, maybe the year after. So, but he said, I want out. He just doesn't like the way he's being used. He's worried about, and if you're an NFL player, you got to think longevity. And if you're playing running back, your longevity is 5 years. That's it. I mean, the average running back lasts, if they're lucky, 4 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. That's why it's silly, I'll repeat, it's silly, for teams to give tons of money to running backs, like the Panthers did with Christian McCaffrey, and now suddenly he's hurt all the time. The same the way that the Cowboys spent all the money on Elliott. We knew when they made that deal that was a mistake. The Chiefs did the same thing with Larry Johnson. A lot of teams have done it, where they give too much money for a running back. You need to learn. You do not ever give a running back, unless he's the greatest running back of all time and in his prime would be the only exception. You do not give a running back huge money. You can find other guys. And Debo Samuel is a unique hybrid. And he's saying, listen, late in the season, he was lined up at running back a lot more because the Niners were trying to what? Make the playoffs. And then they made a run to the NFC title game, and he just doesn't want to be used in that way. Now, I'm not saying he doesn't want to still play some running back, but he doesn't want to have that much wear and tear on his body, which makes sense. You're 26. Mm-hmm. There's only so many miles on the tires when you're an NFL player with the hits that you take. You take hits as a wide receiver. Now you add in the fact you become a running back and you're supposed to be a wide receiver, and sometimes he's a returner. So he basically is saying, listen, I want my money, sure, but I don't like the way I'm being used. So he demanded a trade yesterday. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to be traded. First of all, you need somebody to pony up and give what the Niners are willing to want. But also, the Niners can say, you're a young guy in your prime. We don't care what kind of deal we get. You're staying. You can hold out all you want. We're gonna give you your money. We want to give you your money. So if it's a problem with usage, to me, I think this can be worked out. That's my feeling. But just for fun and giggles, the Chiefs have an opening at the number one wide receiver spot. And you consider how dynamic the Chiefs offense was with Tyreek Hill, and I think can still be dynamic without him. And you understand the toys that Andy Reid has worked with in his career. I mean, he had Brian Westbrook, who was a receiver slash running back in essence, okay? He had Donovan McNabb, and Michael Vick. He's had Patrick Mahomes. He's had Travis Kelce. He's had Tyreek Hill. He's got Mecole Hardman. It's kind of a bit of a toy, too. He's had all kinds of toys that he's played with. And everywhere he's gone, he somehow puts together a great offense. Even the Eagles, Todd Pinkston was their leading receiver, and they were really good offensively, believe it or not. Isn't that something? So there is an article out there, and there's some other articles saying, well, the Chiefs have all kinds of draft capital here. And the Chiefs, one of the drawbacks to giving Tyreek Hill all the money was, one, he was 28 and a little smaller stature. And, of course, they didn't want to give $30 million a year. Now, Deebo Samuel is going to want probably about that same money. He's 2 years younger. He's more built. He could take more punishment. He's not as fast as Tyreek Hill, but he would be an unbelievable toy to put in the Kansas City Chiefs offense with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. Now, I think people are dreaming here. However, if you want to entertain this idea, the Chiefs are in a better position than most to have the draft capital to give the Niners what they want and bring in Samuel. Then you'd have to sign him to a long-term deal, which then I think handcuffs you, and that's why you just revert back to why not just give Hill all the money then.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reason would be Samuel is a little bit more of a hybrid, and he's 2 years younger. So there is some articles out there saying there are five teams that would make sense based on draft capital and everything else that could put together the decent package or a great package to offer the Niners to bring in Deebo Samuel on a trade. And the Chiefs are one of those five teams. And if you put him with Scantling, Hardman, and Schuster, should they just hand the Lombardi over to the Chiefs? I'm joking, because they still have to stop people. And I personally, let me tell you something right now. Would I like to see Deebo Samuel as a Chief in this offense with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes? Oh, dear Lord, yes. Give that to me in a heartbeat. But if it requires the Chiefs, that means that they have to give up too many draft picks and they have a defense that isn't fixed. It ain't going to matter. They're not going to outscore everybody to win a Super Bowl. They just won't. Go back to 2018. They almost did, but they didn't. And so they need to not get caught up in the sexy toy that all the Chiefs fans are going, ooh, we got draft capital. We could give them our two firsts this year and a first next year and give them $29 million a year on a four-year deal, $100 million guaranteed, and we got Deebo Samuel locked up. And man, yeah, okay, great. Now, what are we going to do on defense? We're just going to go with three fourth-round picks that we have left and just throw them out there as rookies? What are we going to do defense? Because right now it's not like the Chiefs have – like they have a decent amount of cap space now, but you go get Deebo Samuel, that changes all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go back to the, well, why didn't you just go ahead and keep Tyreek Hill then, even though he's 2 years older? He knows the system, so forth and so on. I think this is a pipe dream. I don't think the Chiefs are going to do this, because to me that means that they reverse course on what they're planning on doing once they traded Tyreek Hill. But they are – let's be honest, they are one of the few teams that have enough draft capital with multiple picks and first round, second round, third round, even fourth round picks that they could, and now with more cap space not signing Hill, they technically could pull this off. I don't think they will. I don't think they necessarily should. But at the same time, if they did, It'll be fun to watch, and I think you better get ready for 41, 38 games almost every week because that means the Chiefs haven't addressed their defensive issues.
Yeah, I mean, you're insane if you wouldn't love to see Deebo Samuel on your team, no matter what team you're on.
Listen, if you didn't have to sign to a long-term deal and he's under contract, I would give three first-round picks for him right now. I would do that.
Yeah.
Because it's the money that's going to handcuff you.
Yeah, and it's just like, but there's certain ways to use your chips, and you can't go all in for the future with just getting Deebo Samuel. I think you're better off finding a guy in the draft that is a wide receiver that has a skill set that you think is similar that you hope will translate, but you don't know because Debo's actually done it in the NFL, and this guy hasn't, that you're going to find in the draft. But it also is not going to handicap you down the road like Deebo would if it doesn't work out, and so down the road, if Deebo is not the same Deebo because he took too much punishment already last year, then it's handicapping you even more and more and more as you keep going with it. And that's something that you just, at some point, you'd have to stop the bleeding. And why not just stop it before it starts? Just take the necessary precautions right away.
Keep this in mind. You sign Ronald Jones, and he's a more between-the-tackle runner. So that's where you can get your physical yards. And Deebo can be physical, and he's fast. We understand that. You already got a McCole Hardman can run the jet sweep action, so you don't need Deebo to do that. And the Niners use him in that way many ways. And you do have three pretty solid receivers, I think. You got Juju, you've got Hardman who came on, and you've got Scantling, and all three have good speed, and two of those three have more size than they've ever had before for Patrick Mahomes. So now, if you go get a tall, fast receiver in the draft, or maybe it's a smaller, fast receiver that's a bit of a clone to Tyreek Hill, nobody will ever be like Tyreek Hill. Okay, you filled the receiver spot. Running back-wise, you already have that covered with the combination of Helaire and Jones, and if it's Derek Gore, if you bring back Darrell Williams, whatever the case, but Jerick McKinnon, whatever, and then you got McCole Hardman runs some jet sweep action, you got your running game covered. To me, the only way it really makes sense is if the Chiefs had a really good defense and they were one piece away on offense to get them over the hump. And that's not the case at all. They need to get over the hump. They need to get the defense better. And trading a whole bunch of picks and then pay a ton of money to a 26-year-old guy that took a ton of hits last year, although I think he's fine to have if he's using the right way, I think he probably has at least 4 or 5 years still in the tank. It might not be a horrible contract to give. It just handcuffs you too much. And that's why I applaud the trade of Tyreek Hill, because I think it opens up the window for the Chiefs to do all kinds of things and can fill 4 or 5 needs instead of having a luxury. And I think Deebo Samuel, they don't need. To me, it's a luxury. You know what I'm saying? And do you really want to not fill a few needs to have a luxury instead of fill an actual need? And if that would happen to be, if the Chiefs were all set and they're one piece away, okay, let's go all in and get Deebo Samuel. But the Chiefs need 2 pass rushers. They need a corner. I'd argue they need another linebacker. You could argue they need a right tackle, perhaps, if Niang doesn't come back healthy. You can argue they need to get a guy ready to go to replace Travis Kelce, unless you think that's Noah Gray down the line. There's some needs this team has. And if you trade a whole bunch of picks and bring in Deebo Samuel, all you do is make your offense better. That's great. But then, once again, you're one-sided and you're not balanced. And I thought that was the whole idea of trading Tyreek Hill was, we're going to become a little bit more of a balanced team, take a little bit more pressure off Patrick Mahomes, our defense is going to get better, and maybe run the ball a little bit more, which I'll believe that when I see it, by the way.
I would say this is somewhat possible, maybe like in the 5-10% range to get Deebo. If it was,
I wouldn't put more than 10. I agree.
Right. If it was just draft capital, maybe more likely. If it was just cap space, maybe more likely. If this happened maybe a little bit earlier, I could see a better chance of it. Mm-hmm. Maybe you don't get Scantling or Juju. Yeah. You just do one or the other. You use your cap space. Maybe Ronald Jones doesn't come and use your cap space a little bit different.
I agree.
But I think this is going to be a good thing for the Chiefs in the long run if they stand pat, because one of these teams will take Deebo, and it's going to be a team like the Jets or the Texans or one of these teams that have one of the 5 on there, or one of some other team that have a couple first-round picks trying
that
to get better.
Might not draft a receiver.
And they might not draft a receiver, so that's going to drop one receiver down the line for the Chiefs to pick at 29 or 30.
Or trade up.
Yeah, and now if this Deebo thing gets done before the draft or during the first day to give the Chiefs a little time to think about this, now I think we're going to see a better chance of the Chiefs trading up a little bit farther I still don't think they're going to go all too crazy to get to like 10 or anything.
Yeah.
But I could see a now possibility where maybe that was going to be their fourth receiver on their board. Mm-hmm. Now that might be the third
receiver.
And I kind of think there's three that are above the rest. Garrett Wilson, Drake London, and Jameson Williams. I know you don't get Williams right away.
I like Olave from Ohio State.
I like him too.
That's the four best in my opinion.
Yeah. So maybe if you kind of get into that top tier, I think now there's a better chance.
No, I agree
for the Chiefs to trade up. I still don't think they have to.
No.
To get a good one, but maybe a little bit better chance.
Here's what I believe, and we'll talk more about the draft when we get closer to time. It's a week from tonight, but here's what I believe. I believe the Chiefs, if they're going to move up in the first round of any significance, whether they move up to 20, 15, if they go crazy, move up to 10, or they move up to 26, let's say.
Right.
I think it's going to be I think people are getting in the wrong position. I think the wide receiver is so deep in this draft. And here's the thing I don't know, we don't know, is how do they have these receivers? There's six or seven really good receivers in the first round that could go. They in second round, too. The Chiefs could have all these guys very closely graded. But then when it comes to pass rushers, they might have two guys that are clearly above the rest. And so they're like, listen, we can sit here at 29 and 30. We got two picks. And we can trade one of those and maybe a first-round pick next year, or we could trade one of our seconds and the first this year to move up to 21. And instead of getting a receiver like people think they're going to do, they're going to get that second-best pass rusher or third-best or whatever they think, an edge rusher. And then they have a pick still in their back pocket. They can still get the receiver. And if that receiver they thought was going to be at 29 or 30 suddenly is gone, well, guess what? Trade down, and you can still get the next best receiver you want. Because to me, the Chiefs don't – do they need another receiver? Yes, they do need another receiver in the stable. There's no doubt about that. Do they need a super stud number one wide receiver? I don't think they have to have it. Would it be nice? Sure. And just because you draft a receiver in the first round, whether you move up and get Jameson Williams or Chris Olave, or if you move up to Drake London, or you just stay where you are or trade down and get a receiver, it don't matter where these guys are picked. You still don't know if they're going to be studs or not. Mm-hmm. Like, Chiefs fans are automatically just assuming whoever the Chiefs draft at wide receiver in the first round is going to be the number one wide receiver. Odds are it's going to take a while to adjust to the pro level. I don't think you can count on any of these guys being the next Jamar Chase. And by the way, Jamar Chase had all kinds of drop problems early in the season, and people were criticizing him. So there were growing pains for Jamar Chase, and it helped playing with the guy he played in college with all the time. Mm-hmm. Patrick Mahomes ain't going to be playing with a guy he played in college all the time. So there's going to be growing pains. And so when you draft a wide receiver, Chiefs fans are just automatically thinking, well, at 29 or 30, we're going to get our number one wideout. That'll replace Hill. We're going to have this great receiving core. Or what most Chiefs fans are going, well, I'm disappointed we didn't trade up because, you know, we traded up and got to 15 and got Olave, or if we got Jameson Williams, dude, we are set. Well, what might happen is the guy you draft, whether it's Jameson Williams, Chris Olave, or whoever it may be, that guy may come in and he might make good contributions, but you know what he probably will be his first year? He ain't going to be a straight-up number one. He might be a two or a three, so you're going to have a combination of a whole bunch of twos, which is fine. There's nothing wrong. It means that if you got a whole bunch of twos, you don't have a one. That's fine, but that means you don't have a three or a four. You got guys that can spread the field. You can diversify your offense. You can throw it, spread the field even more instead of just throwing it up for Tyreek Hill to catch in an overtime game, an AFC title game. You don't have to always lock on to Travis Kelce. And Mahomes has proven he can move the ball around when Kelce's been out of a game. He's proven it. Well, he can move the ball around when Tyreek Hill's been hurt or with COVID or banged up. Mahomes has proven he can do it. So I think Chiefs fans are all stuck on this. No matter who we get in the first round, that's going to be our stud number one receiver. Listen, at 29 and 30, it's probably not going to be the stud number one. It might be. And even if you get Jameson Williams, we don't know if he's going to be a stud number one. We might think he is, but he might end up being the fourth best receiver, and the guy that went early in the second is the best receiver in the draft. Let me remind you that Mecole Hardman was drafted before DK Metcalf. Which guy would you want on your team right now? Right. DK Metcalf was at the very end of the second round, if I remember correctly. Tons of teams passed on him once, even twice. You go back and look at that draft, he might be the best receiver that came out of that draft. I don't have it in front of me. So it's possible the Chiefs don't even have to trade and get their stud. It's also possible they trade up and they get a number two or three wideout and he ain't a stud.
And also,
and that's the crapshoot called a draft.
Yeah.
And Ja'Marr Chase is kind of an outlier with rookie wide receivers anyway.
Yes.
They usually don't put up 1,200, 1,400 yards a rookie year. It usually gets to second and third. Now it's becoming easier as the rules have relaxed. But it used to be that first years just get used to things, then take off a little bit your second year. But, I think whoever they get can fit in nicely, be an option of three of four options, be one of them, and contribute some. If you have to wait a little bit for, say, and I don't know if Jameson Williams will be there or be the guy they pick, but if you have to wait a little bit longer for him to heal, that's fine. It's like an extra guy later on in the season. But you're right. I think more likely pass rush first, and then they'll worry about receiver because of the discrepancy in the depth of the two positions.
I think we all agree. Priority, I think edge rusher, if there's a really good one there, you go with him instead of receiver. That's just me. I think we all agree on that because that's a bigger place of need. Todd says, wide receivers are all divas. No guarantees, won't have off-field issues, let alone can they make the adjustment NFL. Listen, that's a great point because think about this. Henry Ruggs was considered to be a great draft pick, right? Speed from Alabama. Yeah. He's in a pro system. How's that worked out?
Yeah.
Even Jeff Judy in Denver hasn't ended up being the great receiver people thought he'd be. Now, he might eventually. You know, Amari Cooper took a while to get going in his career, too, by the way. So just because, Alabama runs pro-style offense now, and they got these stud receivers. I mean, when you look at the receivers from Alabama, you know, there are some really good ones there in the NFL. Don't get me wrong. Devontae Smith looks like he's going to be a pretty good receiver. But the superstar receivers in this league, is there one that's actually from Alabama? Like a superstar receiver. Like Ja'Marr Chase is LSU. DeAndre Hopkins was not Alabama. I'm trying to think of top receivers. Obviously, Tyreek Hill wasn't. Devontae Adams wasn't even a first-round pick.
Amari was pretty high at one time.
He took a while to get going in his career, is my point.
Yeah.
He became a really good receiver.
Like the guys that are out there right now, like you said, Jerry Jeudy, and then, we don't know about Devontae Smith yet. But,
he had a pretty good rookie
year in the league. So, if you really think about it and think about the best receivers in the league they're not Alabama guys that are coming to your mind.
Next thing, too, if you're the Chiefs, do you prioritize with a wide receiver, prioritize speed or size? You got size already, but you also got pretty good speed with Scantling Hardman. You get both. You take both. Do you prioritize one or the other?
If both are there,
then you take.
If you have a guy that can do both, Valdez Scantling, maybe on steroids or something, just a better version of that, then you take it. But if not, I think you just take whoever's top of your board. I don't think you worry about size or speed necessarily because I feel like with the quarterback you have, you're going to be able to work. If they have a skill set that's really, really good, you're going to be able to work with that no matter what.
Here's the reason I asked this question. Because Mecole Hardman and Scantling could stretch the field.
Yeah.
All right? Juju's going to probably be a possession receiver. So is Travis Kelce. We leave Kelce out of this whole wide receiver group, by the way. Right. So they really have four receivers already. But, Caden Davis, who's from Ellsworth, Kansas, he's been working out Dez Bryant. Mm-hmm. And he could be – based on his body build and everything – I mean, Wes Welker had an unbelievable career as a slot receiver. And every great offense usually needs a guy to be that slot receiver. And Juju's going to be kind of that, I think, too. But maybe the Chiefs are better off getting a 5'11 guy like a Christian Watson from North Dakota State. And he runs 4.4. And he can go deep. He can stretch the field. Or maybe the Chiefs are better off with a guy that runs a 4.5. That's 6'2. Can go over the middle and make tough catches and play underneath, and that opens the field up for Scantling and Hardman to go deep vertically down the field, and so thus you have to respect and can't just run two deep safeties all the time. There's all kinds of different combinations, and I think the great thing about the Chiefs, and I think it's been overlooked by some people nationally, is that they have a really good combination of size and speed now than they ever have. Mm-hmm. Yes, you lost Tyreek Hill. That's a tremendous amount of speed you lost, but Scantling had the fastest run of after a catch last year of anybody in the NFL, including Tyreek Hill. He barely runs slower than Tyreek Hill, 4.37, Hill's 4.29. Now, I know there's a difference, don't get me wrong, but Scantling's also 6'5", and Tyreek's 5'10", so there's a difference there as well. Maybe that cashes out, and I know Scantling's not anywhere near Hill in regards to production, but maybe he's just a diamond in the rough that the Chiefs got to mold. The point being is, Scantling has size and speed, and Mahomes has never had that. Two, you got Hardman with the speed. We already know that. And you got Juju, who's experienced, even though he's only 25, who's played in a good offense with a Hall of Fame quarterback that can sometimes go deep, but also take the punishment over the middle. And oh, yeah, you got a guy named Travis Kelce who can do any of that. Mm-hmm. And then you add in a guy that maybe, are you looking for a guy to stretch the field even more than what you have? Or are you looking for a guy that's going to be like a Wes Welker? That you can always, okay, you're going to double Kelce. I'll kill you with Wes Welker all day long. You want to double Welker? Well, then I'm going over the top to Hardman or Scantling. So it is intriguing to me which way the Chiefs will go when they draft a receiver. Will they end up with a taller receiver that maybe runs a tad slower, or a really fast guy that might be smaller? And we've seen with Andy Reid, he can make all of this work or in Kansas City. So Chiefs fans, I say, trust in Brett Veach, trust in Andy Reid. And if it's the sixth best receiver in your mind and they pass on a guy you love, don't get all mad and ticked off about it, because guess what? They probably know more than you do, and they probably know the fit is better. And oh, by the way, the thing that nobody talks about, I'll let Jason in to finish up in a second. The thing that nobody talks about when you talk about NFL draft, hardly anybody talks about it. The fans sure as heck don't talk about it, is what Todd just alluded to. These guys that they think about drafting, they bring in for interviews. They try to find out the character. They do the testing to see how smart you are, but they also try to find out, what do you do in your free time? Do you race cars like Henry Ruggs? Maybe we're not going to draft you. You got a tremendous amount of upside, but doggone it, we don't think you're going to be able to stay out of jail. You know, these things go on behind the scenes. So then Chiefs Kingdom and anybody else's kingdom of fans say, well, God, we got to get Jameson Williams. That guy, even though it's 20-0, we got to get that guy. Can you imagine that guy? And then what, he ends up being the next Henry Ruggs II, and he gets in trouble all the time. And then guess what, Chiefs fans, later on, why did we draft that guy? There are red flags. Wait a minute, you're the one that screamed to get him, and all you got to do is look at two examples. Kareem Hunt had red flags when he was drafted in third round out of Toledo. A lot of fans didn't know that at the time. Some may not even know it today, okay? The Chiefs decided he was worth the risk, and it worked out for the years he played for the Chiefs, and then it imploded, and they had to move on from him, correct? Mm-hmm. They didn't. Luckily, it happened soon enough, they didn't have to give him a long-term deal, which I was told he was never going to get one from the Chiefs because they knew of his history. Tyreek Hill, people are up in arms when he got drafted. Oh, he beats up women, he does this, he does that. How could we draft a guy like this? What a horrible pick in the fifth round. And then a year later, everybody's doing the peace sign. I love Tyreek, and wearing Tyreek Hill jerseys, which means you're a bunch of hypocrites because you didn't stick to your guns. He was still the same guy. If you believe that, he was still the same guy. And so we don't know, first of all, the drive and the motivation and the willpower of these young guys. We don't know what a big contract's going to do to change them as well. Are they divas? Do they have huge egos? Do they think they're going to roll in and go, yeah, yep, I'm the missing piece from Mahomes. All I got to do is just go right down the field, and he's going to throw it up to me, and I'm going to catch it. No. You're going to have to understand how to run a route. Josh Gordon couldn't even get on the field, and he's an experienced wide receiver. He couldn't barely get on the field because he only had enough time to learn a few offensive formations. It's that complicated. So he has a full offseason now. He might be a guy we're not even talking about that can contribute and be an extra guy in the stable of receivers. But it isn't just like you flip a switch, you snap your fingers, and you automatically know the playbook. It takes time. Jamar Chase is a freak of nature, and there was the combination of him working with Joe Burrow that you will not have with Patrick Mahomes, because there is nobody from Texas Tech, and Mahomes is further removed because he was the 17th draft or whatever. But the point being is, these coaches and these organizations and GMs and scouts are trying to peel back layers of a player besides what they do on the field. Us fans, what do we see? We see the combine. Ooh, man, that guy, holy cow, he jumped so high. You see that 6'2", 300-pound defensive tackle run a 4.5 40. Dear Lord, we need him on that team. What you don't know, he's dumber than a box of hammers. You have no idea how smart the guy is. You don't know that he is a guy that all he wants to do, he doesn't even care about football. He just wants to make it so he can get a big, big contract, rookie deal, get his money, and he can buy mom a house, and he's going to get fat, and he's going to eat pudding pops and anything else like I used to do. Dang, Bill Cosby. And so You don't know any of these things. I don't know it. Dusty doesn't know it. Jason doesn't know it. Chiefs fans don't know it. And honestly, probably even the Chiefs higher-ups really technically don't know for sure what money's going to do to a guy. So when you're drafting, they put so much thought and effort into trying to get the right guy. But there are so many moving pieces to figure out which guy do I draft. And so when Chiefs fans look at pick number 29, let's say the Chiefs stay there, and they pick a guy that you're like, oh, dear Lord, he's rated as a second-round pick by Mel Kiper. What a reach. What you don't know is that the other guys that you think are so great have red flags that the Chiefs have already identified and said, nah, I ain't going to work here. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to look pretty smart a couple years down the road.
No, I was going to answer your question about the style of wide receiver.
I want a guy that catches the ball. That's what I want.
So if you're going to, in this draft, you have the kind of two differences. You have the Drake London. There's the big, tall, big guy. He's going to catch the comeback routes, the in routes, that kind of stuff.
I'll tell you honestly, I'm not on the Drake London and train myself.
You probably have Jameson Williams as the closest to Tyreek, style-wise. I would go with the guy closest to Tyreek just because you know it worked. But
isn't Mecole Hardman closer to Tyreek Hill than probably some
probably,
of the guys you
mentioned? Probably, but if you have one or two of them, then you got to have that guy that sits back and plays way deep. It's just because of the threat of them. I think the threat of DeSean Jackson in his prime was better than the actual receiver of DeSean Jackson.
Totally agree.
So I think if you have that on there with your big tight end and your Juju Schuster who can work around in the short passing game, and then every so often on a blitz or whatever, you get that Tyreek Hill type player out on one-on-one, then I think you got something there. Now, I'm not saying you can't make this work with a Sammy Watkins type of guy or whoever is like that. A good receiver is a good receiver, and like you said, Andy Reid, Eric Bieniemy are going to find ways to make that work. So,
Right now, I'll tell you a guy I like is Chris Olave from Ohio State.
I like him, too.
6'1", 187, good route runner, very good route runner. I mean, he's a terrific route runner. And I always say that if you're a great route runner, you can overcome being a little slower. That makes up for it. If you got great speed but can't run routes, and guys that can run – Jerry Rice is a great example of that. Hello, the greatest receiver of all time. He ran like a 4.640. He wasn't super fast. But guess what? Nobody caught him when he did catch it, as we talked about before, because he's so good in and out of his breaks. I think Olave is one of the best route runners out there, and according to mock drafts, they have him going around 16 or 17, in some cases 15. Okay, the Chiefs want to go that high to go get him? I don't know. But that's a guy that I like, that if he would slide a little bit and the Chiefs need to – if he's there at 20, Chiefs want to go up and get him, I'm okay with that. But once again, I don't know. Olave might have a really bad family history. He might be all about not caring about football, and it's not his love. He might have some red flags that I'm not aware of. So that might be my guy, and I might be, but he was there, and we passed on him. And maybe that's what the Broncos saw at Mac Jones. Maybe they didn't like Mac Jones' attitude, because he got a bit of a different attitude. Mm-hmm. Does Mac Jones, and maybe the Broncos, we give them a whole bunch of grief. They passed on Mac Jones out of Alabama, and the Patriots were right there and didn't have to move up, and they got him. And we were like, making fun because the Broncos settled for Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Locke instead of getting Mac Jones. Maybe the Broncos had some things in their research and said, there's something about Mac Jones that's just not going to be a good fit here, and so we're not going to draft him. And, then it might blow up in your face later on. The kid might mature, and that red flag disappears. But when you draft, you got to go on what you know at the time. You can't project. I mean, you can try to project, but you get in trouble when you start projecting. Just ask any of us when we try to make predictions for the NCAA tournament. All right, that's a wrap on this one. Lots of unbelievable things going on. I mean, a star coach retiring when he looks like he's 40 and he's actually 60, and the Royals are on fire. They've won 3 in a row, and seven-footers are hitting three-pointers to win games. That's just crazy. And then fans not going to Oakland A's game. And I didn't even touch upon tennis players being banned from Wimbledon because... You want to share that real quick?
Because Daniil Medvedev apparently is driving tanks into Ukraine.
I did not know that.
Keeping this war going, because Russia and Belarus are in support. Well, Russia is obviously the one that started the war with Ukraine, and Belarus is supporting Russia. If you are from those countries, you are not allowed to play in Wimbledon this year. They have banned you to play in that tournament. The All England Club says, nope, can't play if you're from those countries. I don't understand how that decision was made by Daniil Medvedev or Victoria Azarenka or anybody else involved.
I don't either. And I'll say, too, about that, for you people listening right now going, what's the big deal? You don't care. Imagine if some country was fed up with us and say, you know what? We're not letting any of the USA athletes participate in the Olympics. So we're not letting them. We're not letting. You know what? We're not going to let Serena and Venus Williams participate in Wimbledon.
Yeah. We don't like that you beat us in 1776. You can't play in our tournament anymore.
We're fed up.
You know?
Yeah. And everybody knows. You can blame all these countries. You can be mad at whoever you want to be. But we know the real culprit, and that's the Germans, as Dusty pointed out. Dirk Nowitzki's fault that Joel Embiid doing step back threes.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.